if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast 209. This is our 2022 AT&T Byron Nelson Plus Sudal Open Tips podcast. Paul Williams and Barry O'Hanrahan join me, Steve Bamber, to discuss this week's PGA and DP World Tour action and betting selections. Good morning, gents.
Morning, guys.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world famous golf betting system website with our in-depth betting previews, tournament strokes gained analysis, tournament form statistics, plus our predictive models. All of these features, like this podcast, are completely free of charge. There is no paywall. Barry on Twitter is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. You can join our Golf Betting System Facebook group. The link is available in the description box. Plus, look out for the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where I present the Golf Betting Show every week. Please subscribe and like the shows. As I say, you can actually listen to this podcast on the YouTube channel. Now, you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts. As ever, for those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. This one is entitled Englishman, Irishman and Steve Bamford. Five stars. Greetings. Love listening to this podcast every week from Almeida, California. The lads' knowledge and stats are second to none. They explore the course and cover everything from course changes year to year to weather, strokes gained tee to green and everything in between. Everything is given to you as a listener to make an informed, confident decision for your golf betting. Great stuff, chaps. Enjoy your golf betting week. And that is from Marcus Watson, who clearly is in Almeida, California.
Lovely stuff. Thank you, Marcus, for that review. Very nice.
I've got a shout out as well, chaps. Our first ever shout out. I was asked a few weeks ago to push a shout out out there. So this is a shout out for the Four Putters. That is their WhatsApp group name. The Four Putters. And they are Nelly, who sent me the message, John, Billy, Whittles, and Fardelar. Nelly, John, Billy, Whittles, and Fardelar. The Four Putters. Thanks for supporting the show, chaps.
Indeed, yes. Thank you very much.
I'm glad it's a group of four people and not people who four put.
There's Nelly, he's one. John is two, Billy's three, Whittles is four, and five is Fardelar. So there's actually five of them, and they're called the Four Putters. So if you were following them, they're making 20 putts per hole.
Oh, no. My coffee needs to kick in.
I mean, that'd be like playing with Kevin Nahr or someone like that, wouldn't it? Or Keegan Bradley, for example. Well, you wouldn't really get into much of a rhythm.
That's some needle. You're supposed to be a good winner, Steve. What's going on?
Well, should we talk about last week?
Please.
Let's talk about the Betfred British Masters first, shall we? What happened, Paul?
Yeah, well, the finish was incredible, wasn't it? I don't know if you saw the recovery from Thurlborg and Olsen at the end to win from seemingly having snatched success and then defeat and then made eagle birdie over the last two holes with two absolute bombs to break Sebastian Soderberg's heart. I mean, Soderberg didn't do anything whatsoever wrong. He posted his total sitting in the clubhouse, and Olsen came along and just robbed him at the end. Simple as that. It was just theft, wasn't it?
What makes the Belfry so tricky?
This is probably the point, really, because I didn't see many people tipping up Olsen last week, and you could have made a tentative case for him because there was the odd decent round in the last few weeks, but nothing special. And it's generally a really strong tee to green test. You've got to be hitting your ball. It's a ball striking test. Yet Olsen came out and just putted his way to victory, effectively.
Mm.
And it kind of blows that model, that assumption, that narrative out of the water. But, you know, you see this time and again, don't you? Someone can just come along and have an incredible week or make some putts at the right time, as he did there. And it just completely flips everything on its head. But that's gold for you, isn't it?
Am I wrong in saying that he seems to fire up on classical tree-lined English courses, or not even necessarily English, but he just seems to pop in my head for these, and he didn't pop in it for last week. But
yeah, he's one at Perth, isn't he? Which you could have drawn some parallels to it to a certain degree. I mean, Perth's a little bit wider, I'd have thought, but yeah, well, St Andrews he won, didn't he? Or the Dunhill Links. I don't know. I you could infer that there's a level of firmness in terms of the greens or the fairways sometimes, and you could kind of tie him into that as well. But I don't know. It was just his time. It was his week, and if you do what he did there at the end and nail a couple of 30, 40 footers to get yourself over the line, then fair play to you. Really good. Not so good from the betting perspective, but of the players that I had that were fringy, Justin Harding was probably the most disappointing from my perspective.
Was he like second tee to green and like 95th in the field for strokes gained putting or something like that? I saw yesterday.
It was, when you look at it, you boil it down, he finished five back in the end. There was a stretch on Friday, I think it was, where he missed, I think it was something like seven putts from inside 4 feet in the space of about 10 holes. It was just relentless. Whatever happened to him mentally at that point with the short putts, it just couldn't make one. And he was missing them from 4 feet, 3 feet, 3.5 feet, from 2.5 feet. Everything, literally everything was missing. And, in another week he makes those putts, he wins the tournament. And frustrating.
Did you mention off mic that Daniel Van Tonder's the last one to get into the PGA Championship field?
He's physically the last one, I don't know. But
he's in at 103,
103rd in the world. So, yeah, he's just going through the list of qualifiers this morning. He's managed to sneak into the field for next week, which is huge for him. Yeah, there's a lot of additions actually over the last overnight from yesterday.
So. There is a lot here. Harding squeaked in as well. I'm seeing Harding in. As ever, it's going to be a fantastic field. Just for note for listeners, we will be doing a PGA Championship research podcast this week, later this week. So keep that in mind. I'll tell you another thing about the Belfry. To get that course so bouncy and firm in the first week of May, that's some effort in Birmingham.
Yeah,
it just shows you what a kind of dry summer we've had and dry winter and dry spring.
Yeah, there's not been much rain about us there, but generally it's a tricky course, isn't it? And if you had some real wind in there one year, it could be really quite brutal if it was firm and windy over there at the same time. But good test. Just ultimately a little bit disappointing with Harding and Jordan Smith as well, who kind of flattered at various points and then still didn't get into the mix, really.
I had a final hole bogey on JC Ritchie.
You did,
100 or 125-1. It was so close, but not bad for me on the European Tour to get somebody to make the cut as an achievement, so...
Yeah, no, that final hole's brutal as well, isn't it? So,
it's a par 4.5.
Yeah, par's a great score on that 18th. So, Yeah, no, but as unlucky, Barry. But you both made up for it in spades over on the PGA Tour with your Homer selections. So well done, both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
He's a proper player, Max Homer. He's a proper... He's getting more consistent, but he's boom or bust, isn't he? I've put him up before and he's missed the cut. And when he misses the cut, he misses the cut badly. But when he's in contention, the guy is pretty stone wall, isn't he? That's four PGA Tour victories now.
Mm. He's a bit of a killer, isn't he? He's a bit of an assassin when he gets up there.
He's like a cute assassin, isn't he? He's not like Brooks Koepka strutting around and grunting and all this rubbish. He just lets the clubs do the talking, doesn't he? And even when he celebrates, there's just that little fist pump, nothing major, bang. I had a message here, guys. It was on Twitter from John at BetWinners123. He sent this to us. I listened to the podcast yesterday, which I think would have been Saturday. Went out for a walk with the dog. Eerily accurate. Weather, scores, the whole lot. Well played. It's true, actually. We spoke through that, the course, how difficult it was. We went through the weather. How it was going to be an absolute nightmare. I said high single digits. I was hearing 13, 14 under a win. I'm looking at the forecast going, no chance. That place is major championship tough. Mm. When the wind blows, that's a nightmare, that golf course. And slowly but surely, those players that you kind of fancy in those conditions start to levitate up the leaderboard. Once we'd got through the first round, you know, and people are out there scoring some quite low scores because it wasn't very testing and there was no wind at all. And then on the Friday, it just started to turn and all of a sudden you started to see players levitate. You know, the proper players that are actually going to contend for this.
Yep.
Yeah, good. I enjoyed it. That to me is proper... professional golf, those kind of tournaments where they're grinding. And the rain, they couldn't get off the course. There was no electrical activity.
Yeah.
They just had to grind it out.
Actually, when I was watching that, it was almost fascinating to watch them play the whole round in the rain.
Or, yeah.
You know, for what I was watching, because we just don't get to see it that often on the PGA Tour. Because rain usually is accompanied by electrical activity and they are off the course. And yep. It felt like a unique thing to be able to watch them really grind through that. It's a talent to be able to get around when the conditions are like that.
Yeah, yeah. Going back to the point of the tweet, Steve. I think I haven't done the maths to work it through, but I think if you put down the various players that we had picked between us as a DraftKings team last week, you'd have been pretty damn close to winning the whole lot, I think. Assuming you could have squeezed them all in under the salary, because we're talking Homer, who won, of course, for you guys. Bradley, who through gritted teeth from myself, finished second. Joel Damon, you talked about, Barry. Luke Liston.
Oh, he fell away. he went into reverse big time.
Yeah, he did.
From halfway through. I think it was from the ninth hole in the second round to something like midway through his front nine on his fourth round. He made 17 drop shots before he made a birdie. Mm.
Yeah. Wow.
It was a weird stretch.
Yeah, it was.
After
it was
starting awful. So well.
But Damon, Luke List and
you Matt had Luke List. He was there or thereabouts for a lot of it.
Yeah, Matt Fitz, who you put up as well, finished in tie for second in the end, didn't he? So there's a lot of chances and a lot of good scoring players if you were doing it from a fantasy golf perspective. So it'd be nice if someone did manage to cobble a team together from some of our thoughts and made a few quid.
For the record, Homer was 40-1. Fitzpatrick, who was second, was 20-1, and Bradley, who was also in a tie for second, was he 33s or 35s?
Yeah, well, I took 33s, but I think there was a little bit of 35s with less places, aren't there?
This should all come with a warning that this is an unusual week where we get so many players correct. That just doesn't happen every week. But it was, you know, factors kind of came together quite nicely with the course and the conditions to be able to help us help narrow it down last week, I felt. Mm.
There were plenty of narratives, for sure.
Yeah.
that you could
follow. The final round was intense to watch. Like, it was, it felt like there was never a hole where the difference in scores between Homa and Bradley didn't change. It was quite a nervy watch. I always kind of felt that Max was going to get it done on this, on the final day, but there were times where he was, significantly, in trouble or behind, running into problems, and you're like, God, maybe this isn't going to go well. And then Keegan Bradley gets like the nosebleed at the top of the leaderboard and just like ejects.
Yeah.
I was quite cruel to Paul yesterday, actually. I didn't do it intentionally, Paul. It's just, but I found this statistic about Keegan Bradley. He is now 0-4 when it comes to 54 hole leads on the PGA Tour.
Yeah. What would have been handy is to have had that probably Sunday morning, and then I could have laid some of it off, and it would have been slightly less painful. But no, this is the way the game goes, isn't it? And no, ultimately, I'm delighted for you guys to have picked up another win on the PGA Tour. So all good.
What do you think, Barry, for Max Homa next week at the PGA? Because as we know, a winner at Quail Hollow, a winner at Riviera Country Club, and now a winner at TPC Potomac. See, I got it right again, Paul.
Yep, very good.
I'm seeing him at 80-1 with Betfred and Boyle Sports right now. Only six places each way.
I'm very interested.
For the PGA next week.
I'm very interested. I immediately put him down in my notes for the PGA. He probably would have popped in my head anyway, but this... He's winning. He's won on different, types of golf courses, different types of conditions as well. So this was a soft week. He won at Riviera when it was hard, firm and fast. So if they can get Southern Hills firm and fast, that doesn't scare me. The long game's in great shape, and I'm just trying to look back at the lessons from the Masters, where we all tried to outthink everything instead of choosing the two hottest golfers on the planet at the time, who were Scheffler and Smith. We all tried to get too smart and wander around the place.
Well, do you know there's a trend here that such and such and such and such and such and such won't win?
Yeah. We're smarter than their skills, which is a complete shit show. So, we've backed Max a couple of times recently. We've seen how well he's playing, and he finishes in a win and takes a week off now. He'll be ripping to go.
Listen to this, Barry. You're going to love this. The crazy thing is, though, Betfred, Max Homa, 80-1. Yeah, for the PGA Championship. Paul Casey, 45-1. I don't need to say anymore, do I? 45-1, Paul Casey, 80-1, Max Homa, right now with Betfred for the PGA Championship.
Yeah, I expect you might get your money back if Casey pulls out before the start of the first round again.
You'd need 100-1 that the bloke's even going to start, wouldn't you, Paul Casey? He'd probably be on the ting and go, oh, no, that's me.
Yeah, he's certainly a very dangerous DraftKings player at the moment, isn't he?
He's very low owned.
One week he'll come back and moan
when he withdraws.
Yeah, but he will come back and bite everyone on the backside at some point, because everyone will lose trust in or faith in putting him in a team. And one week he'll play, and then he'll win or he'll contend, and he'll be very lightly owned. But
did you say the other day that the BMW International Open's occurring soon?
Yeah.
Because that is Paul Casey turns up and wins 18-1 territory. And
Pops over for the KLM.
I'm not going to back Paul Casey. He can't even hold a club. And then all of a sudden, 22 under par, wins by one. Paul Casey.
The swing's looking perfect. The back spasms have all gone.
He's chatting to Tim Barr, strutting down the fairway on the Sunday, leading by six. Mm. Yeah, this is great, Tim. My back's never felt better.
Do you think he has a go no go decision based on his DraftKings ownership percentage?
It's got to be tight, the decision, hasn't it? Because he's turning up to these events and he is going through the emotions as if he's going to play, and then he's just pulling out at the last minute. Things aren't right, and whether he needs to then take some time, some proper time, to let whatever the underlying issues are heal, rather than trying to kind of push it each week, I don't know. It's he's completely off my roster at the moment, which I'm sure I speak for many a player who's doing the same thing.
Back to Max then, because I just don't want to talk about Paul Casey anymore. I mean, if we can get Max at 66-1 with extended places next week, I'm very, very deep on that. The top 30 player in the world won twice this year, and he's 66-1. Like, there's something very mismatched about that.
Yep.
Mm. Sitting seventh in the President's Cup points for Team USA now. So it looks like he might be playing that to Quail Hollow. I mean, he's quality, isn't he? In fact, you listen to this. You compare Max Homer and what Max Homer has done since mid-2019 and the amount of victories and contending performances he's had. You compare that to someone like Daniel Berger. People rave about Daniel Berger, don't they? They absolutely rave about the guy, some people. They're proper Daniel Berger truthers. I'm going to be getting hate mail here. I know that. But you look at the cold, hard facts on Daniel Berger, yeah? I'm just bringing him up.
Steve, it's the way you say Daniel Berger.
Well, four PGA victories. And he became a PGA Tour member, I believe, in 2015. So 7 years, and he's had four victories. Two of them at the FedEx St. Jude Classic in 16 and 17. And then you compare that to Homer recently. Yeah, it's different gravy. Totally different gravy. And Daniel Berger is sitting, as he usually is, I can see him at 33-1 for the PGA Championship next week. Mm. And I'm seeing Homer at 66s.
Let's not get too hard on Berger. I think that the comparison,
I've seen Homer 80s. Don't forget the 80s at Betfred or Boyle Sports, yes.
Yeah. I mean, four wins is a phenomenal PGA Tour career. But I think the difference in the last 2-3 years maybe between Homer and Berger is that Homer showing that he's a closer and Berger isn't a closer.
Exactly.
Berger seems to get a bit nervy and twitchy when it gets to the real heat of the battle.
I'm not down on Berger as such, but I'm just trying to highlight, and we've had this discussion on this podcast many hundreds of times, it's closers, isn't it? It's players that can actually get the job done. Because that's what we need as bettors, isn't it? We actually need victories. Top fives at 16-1 for Daniel Berger, doesn't really do a lot for your profit and loss, does it? You need those victories. Mm-hmm. And Homer's definitely, I mean, we won't even go down T2 Tony territory. But yeah, interesting tournament. We should move on, because otherwise it's going to be like an hour and a half podcast and we haven't got time and the listeners haven't got the inclination. So this week's PGA Tour affair is the AT&T Byron Nelson, which is a pretty historic event on the PGA Tour. Been around for donkey's years. It hasn't been around for donkey's years on this particular course. We'll cover that off in a short while. Let me just bring up Bet365 in terms of the very best player odds this week. Bet365 are dominating on best golf prices right now. 2022 to date, they have been best price or equal best price on, listen to this, 83% of PGA Tour and DP World Tour player fields. That's crazy. 83%. So over 4 in 5 players are equal best or best price with Bet365 so far in 2022. You have to say that's impressive. For those of you wanting the best golf odds right now, we recommend Bet365. If you are 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their current bet £10, get £50 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer, plus T's and C's in the podcast description. Right, I must say, one of the players I've tipped up this week, I know that he was a 66-1 chance with the 8 places this week. And when I put him up yesterday afternoon, he was 90-1 with Bet365, which is pretty crazy. But you know me, I'm completely sort of anti Paul Williams. Paul would have gone for the 90s. I go for the additional places, but it's all down to personal choice. This golf course, we only saw it last year. It's TPC Craig Ranch. And all, you know, I sometimes lovingly go into all of the, you know, course details and whatever, but basically this is just standard fare. 7,468 yards. It's a par 72. It's parkland. It's a Weisskopf design. It's wide off the tee. It is there for the taking. It was the fourth easiest PGA Tour stop-off last year. One interesting thing of note, though, and one thing I will bring to the table, bent grass greens. So we haven't seen a lot of bent grass action recently. I think last week was only the second time on the tour so far in 2022. And this is the kind of thing that really gets my agronomy feelers going. This golf course features zoysia grass. So zoysia grass fairways. Now that's quite a rarity on the PGA Tour. You've got to think zoysia grass. Think Tour Championship. So think Eastlake in Atlanta, Georgia. And also think TPC Southwind, where they've played the St. Jude Invitational WGC event for the last 3 years, I think, and also the FedEx St. Jude Classic before that.
Mm. It's usually combined with Bermuda, isn't it, and the greens. It's an odd combination this week with zoysia and bent grass.
You've hit the nail on the head. The only time we've ever seen that was actually at a PGA Championship, which they played at Bellerive Country Club. That was the one Koepka won from a very hard-charging Tiger Woods in 2018. Mm. That mixture of zoysia and bent, rare. Not so rare, though, on the Corn Ferry when I really looked into it. There's a couple of stop-offs on the Corn Ferry Tour down in the south, you know, Alabama, these kind of places, where they do have a mixture of bent and zoysia. There's also one in Missouri, but we might go into that in a little bit more detail in a while. But yes, 25 under won this last year. K.H. Lee. I think you'd have done well to pick K.H. out. He was a 200-1 chance. And that's the thing with this AT&T Byron Nelson. I'll just go through the winners' prices. K.H. Lee at 200-1. Sung Kang at 125-1. He won that at the golf course, I always forget the name of. Trinity Forest. Aaron Wise at 50s, Billy Horschel at 125s, and then we eventually get to a shorter price winner, Sergio Garcia in 2016. He won at the old, is it Las Colinas, I think it was called?
Yep.
He won that 25-1. The average winning price since 2010 of the AT&T Byron Nelson. This is all before you start jumping on Justin Thomas at 14-1. Who was practicing at Southern Hills yesterday, nowhere near the Byron Nelson golf course. 145-1, the overall average winning price of this tournament since 2010. And we're talking about a tournament now that is the week before the PGA Championship.
Mm.
So forget about the agronomy and all this. The thing that I was trying to get my head around is, when you look at the betting, and I've got to say, it's a great field, really, really good field. Scheffler is the favourite. Don't forget, this is Dallas, Texas. It's in the burbs of Dallas, right? So it's a golfing community. We've got a big contingent of PGA Tour pros that live around here. I don't think it's a complete coincidence as well. The last two winners have been South Korean, because the South Koreans all base themselves in Dallas. So we've had Kang, and we've had KH Lee. So you could build a case around Siwoo Kim this week. He's a local lad. I think they play these courses on a regular basis just for practice facilities. Would not be surprised in it at all that that's the case. You won't find anything on Google about that. Anyway, Scheffler's 10-1. He's a local lad. Justin Thomas is a 14-1 chance. Then we've got Xander at 20s, DJ at 22s with Jordan Spieth, and we know that Jordan Spieth's a Dallas man.
Yeah.
Sam Burns is actually shorter than DJ and Spieth. Sam Burns is a 21 chance. Zalatoris at 22s, and then we're out to the likes of Matsuyama. I'm seeing a 30s. I'm also seeing 30s on Joaquin Neiman. There's the constant debate now this week will be, will Brooks Koepka win a ceiling, you know, a ceiling price of 33-1 on Brooks Koepka? And then we're out to the likes of Gooch at 45s, Kokrag, Adam Scott, Tommy Fleetwood at 50s. Good field. Very good field. The thing I was trying to get round in my head is, out of those elite players, who are the ones that actually give a toss this week?
Yeah, yeah, and you also need to get someone who's capable and, I guess, willing the week before a PGA Championship to go seriously deep in terms of the scoring. So you're talking about 25 under last year. You know, it's proper resort level scoring, isn't it?
I think it's not
what you're going to see next week, is it?
Paul, I think the scoring's going to be even lower.
Right.
We saw last year, two of the rounds, it was gusting 20-odd mile an hour.
Mm.
We're not going to see that this year. The Saturday was gusting 25. The Sunday was gusting 22. That was, I think it was suspended for rain as well, just to soften the old course down. Even on the Friday, it was gusting 18 miles an hour. So this year is going to be, get this, it's going to be warmer. It's going to be up into the, it's going to be up into the mid 30s degrees Celsius. It's going to be proper, proper hot. There's no wind. This could be 30 under par.
Yeah, sounds like it. 62, 63s all over the place by the sounds of it.
And you just know that Barry would tell you, you know, the local McKinney fire appliances will be in play this week. They're probably sitting in the car park at TPC Craig Ranch right now, pumping water all over those greens. So I think it's going to be 30 under par.
Yeah, but in their defence...
They have to, because it's going to be mid-30s.
With that temperature, yeah. They have to, or they'll lose the greens.
No, the bent grass greens can't cope with that kind of... Yeah, it's just not going to work.
Too hot. So, yeah, let's get ready for birdies and eagles. It's going to be insane.
It's going to be low. It's completely the total opposite of what we saw at the two tournaments last week.
Yeah.
I literally would have been fairly happy when I started my preview to actually tip up one individual. And that individual, this sounds absolutely mad, but the one player I've had in mind for this for a couple of weeks, and when I saw the weather forecast and there was little wind in it, the one player I wanted on my side was Adam Hadwin. Because if you want a guy that shoots low scores, this guy shot a 13 under par 59 at PGA West in 2017.
Yeah.
And actually, when you look at last year, and I know it's only, you know, I'll be getting the usual tweet, oh, it's only a sample size of 1 year, Steve. Yes, it's a sample size of 1 year. I'm seeing kind of mid-range drivers quite close to the top of the leaderboard. Yeah, Sam Burns is a bit of a bomber, but even that week, he was only 27th for driving distance out of the players that made the cut. He wasn't exactly unleashing everything he had that week, Burns. So this kind of mid-range driver, like a Hadwin, who can just plot his way around a golf course. I basically was looking this week for players that go well in kind of Astrodome, desert-type golf tournaments. We know all the events, the American Express, the old Bob Oak Classic, the Shriners Open, these kind of events, the CJ Cup last year, which Rory won at a ridiculously under par score. Even somewhere like Kapalua, where clearly it was Rahm and Smith going at it. Was it 33 under par or something mad this year? You need players that can go low this week. And Hadwin was just the first one on my list. I managed to get 66-1 on Hadwin with Paddy Power, which I thought was an amazing... When that came up yesterday at lunchtime, I thought, 66-1 on Hadwin? That is a shocking price, as in amazingly good value price. In my 8-week strokes gain trackers, I'm seeing him second behind only world number one Scotty Scheffler over the last 8 weeks for strokes gained approach, tee to green, and strokes gained current form. And we got him at 66s. That's crazy, mate.
Yeah. No, he's been playing some good stuff, hasn't he? What, ninth?
President's Cup year as well, Paul. President's Cup year. He's out of the top 12 at the moment, and Hadwin is a proud member of that team. He's been in the last two renewals.
Mm.
He doesn't win enough, but you can't say Hadwin. When he gets in contention, he tends to hang around, and at some point he might pick one up. I think Hadwin's a great bet this week. I'm seeing him as big as 50s still with Paddy Power, 8 places.
Yeah. No, there's lots of like, isn't there? 9th for the players. 4th at the Texas Open before the Masters. So in terms of this narrative of pre-majors, the players that will attempt to win or contend in a tournament, then there's some recent form there, isn't there? Some recent pointers for Hadwin as well.
If it was blowing 25 plus, I wouldn't have gone near the bloke, because I've said this for years. The guy struggles in the wind, but when I'm seeing a relatively low wind renewal of this, I'm all over Hadwin.
Yep.
It's difficult, isn't it? It really is difficult. You know as well as I do, Paul, that I was going to tip up Adam Schenk at 250-1, but I changed my mind in Schenk. I genuinely think Schenk's got a great chance this week of at least getting an each-way return, because he's another one. You look at Adam Schenk. I think he was third at the Shriners last year. When there's birdies at play, that Schenk guy kind of pops up. And to find him in the top 10 last week at a grinding, technical, high-scoring tournament like Potomac, that isn't Adam Schenk's jam. His jam's this kind of event. So I wouldn't be surprised if Schenk gets in the mix. I actually, in the end, went for Brandon Wu, 125-1, with William Hill I got yesterday, 8 places each way on Brandon Wu. He's up 200 spots in the official world golf rankings. 3rd in Puerto Rico, 33rd at the Valspar, 28th at Corrales, 2nd at the Mexico Open. And he's got, when you look at his Korn Ferry history, he had a 9th at the Price Cutter Championship. Now that is played in, I think it's Missouri. And again, it's one of these weird courses, Zoysia Grass Fairways, Bent Grass Greens. He was also 2nd at the Boise Open, 1st at the Korn Ferry Tour Championship, which they played at Victoria National Golf Club. All of those, bent grass. There's a little mix of power at Boise, but bent grass greens. 2021, he was also 7th at the Huntsville Championship. Again, he was 2nd going into Sunday. That's another course in Alabama that features Zoysia Grass Fairways and bent grass greens. So I was looking through all of this data from the Korn Ferry, and this Brandon Wu just kept popping up in high positions on leaderboards with Zoysia Grass and Bent Grass Greens. And then you just tally that up with the fact that he's had a 3rd in Puerto Rico, a 2nd in the Mexico Open. He's clearly hitting his straps on the PGA Tour. Young, vibrant. We've had 125-1 winners of this tournament, I think twice in the last 4 renewals. So I'm on Brandon Wu, 125-1. He was 6th. Going into Sunday at the 2019 Houston Open, and that was only his 3rd start as a professional. You might remember Brandon Wu. He's one of these. He went to Stanford, so he's constantly linked to Tiger Woods. But this Brandon Wu's a good player. I know Steve Palmer was waxing lyrically about him on his podcast last week. So I'm thinking if it's good enough for Steve Palmer, it's good enough for me. So I'm in on Brandon Wu at 125-1. Any players that take your interest before I go into my final 3 selections? Just throw them in there. Doesn't matter what the price is.
Yeah.
Let's crack through them.
Yeah, I've got 2 that I've backed. I've stuck with Cameron Champ. 50-1 I took with 8 places. Again, there's 66s out there if you want to take the less places. But 10th and 6th from his last 2 starts. We've talked about how he can push on from a top 10. Whether he can do it from 2 consecutive top 10s, we shall see. But 55th here last year. There was a 66 in the second round, so that was reasonably good. And he's far, far, far better form now this year than he was last year. So, out of curiosity, really, to see if he can continue that. But I think theoretically, this suits quite nicely for Champ. to champ, and also I've backed JJ Spawn, going back to that the Texas Open, so pre the Masters, that was when he won. And again, taking that kind of thought process forward to another pre-major tournament in Texas as well. Perhaps two and two together can become four this week. And if you look through his form historically, we've seen him contend in clumps of results. Even going back to some of his very early days, when he finds some form, he can string a few of these big, you know, strong performances together over the course of a few weeks or months. 47th here last year doesn't shout much when you look at it, but he was the first round leader. He was fifth to the halfway point. And again, he's in much better winning form right now. So, Spawn and Champ for me, for the two that I've backed so far.
I'm glad you've covered Champ as a podcast, because we were saying, weren't we, after Mexico, I wonder if Champ can string three together. We know that he's similar to Homer, although the wins that Champ tends to have her at a lower level on easier golf courses. So yeah, I'm glad you covered Champ. Spawn, yeah, he's just one of those types, isn't he?
Yeah,
such a good ball striker when he's on it, can compile really low scores.
And I think it was 63 shot in the first round here last year. So, you know, he's proven that he can go low on this particular track as well. So 100 to 1 with 8 places, I thought was worth a dabble.
Let's see what the Whisperer's got in his in his selection. I know the first thing Barry will say is, oh, I don't like these. Firstly, he'll say he don't like pre-major events. And secondly, he'll say he don't like birdie fests.
Well, yeah, I don't like pre-major. Well, pre-major events are hard to pick because you just don't know where everybody's focus is. Mm-hmm. I feel like I struggle with picking golfers in the birdie fests.
Yeah. Well, it's so more random, isn't it?
Let's go with that as my excuse. Yeah,
which is this?
Yeah, I know. So, look, this week, not gonna say. Yeah, obviously steering well away from the top of the market, and my first pick is Jonathan Vegas.
Yeah, he hung around last week.
Yeah, 15th last week and 9th here last year. So coming out of last week's difficult conditions into a course that he had a top 10 on last year, he'll probably feel pretty good about life, you know, nice and easy this week. So hopefully the birdies can flow. And then another one, I don't know why, but Sahith Tigala popped in my head. And I was just looking at the Waste Management Phoenix results from earlier this year. And he finished tied third. But yeah, just look at the quick leaderboard here. So I just wonder whether this is the kind of event that somebody could pick off when they're theoretically somebody that won't be winning next week because they just don't have the experience under the belt. So anyway, that's what Tigala. I got him at 100 to 1, 8 places.
I don't know how you join the dots, Barry, but you're very insightful because you think of KH Lee. What was the one tournament he came very close to winning before he won this last year? Can you remember? He was a shot back of Brooks Koepka at the Waste Management Phoenix Open last year. So then you put up Sahith to see Tigala, who was leading that Waste Management Phoenix Open this year for a huge chunk of it.
Yep.
Good thinking. I like it. The sort is what I'd say. Tigala. Definitely.
Yeah, let's see. I don't know. I like the Hadwin shout, though. Just, yeah, the beast for scoring when the conditions are benign.
Metrodome, yeah. This is it. The other ones I've gone for, a local lad. He's desperate for his first PGA Tour victory. He's played here tens of times, if not hundreds. He's going to be well supported. He's a Dallas, Texas boy. He's far too good not to be a PGA Tour winner. And for me, he's actually started to putt well, which has always been his huge weakness. He was putting really well when we were in Texas last at the WGC match play, which was his last outing in Texas. He made the quarterfinals. He then ranked in the top 11 for strokes gained putting at the Masters, where he finished sixth. And he was fourth last time out with my friend Davis Riley, who got me a good each-way place at the Mexico Open. That was Birdie City, as it always is, Zurich Classic and New Orleans team event. It was interesting, this particular individual was eight under par for the third round of that, which was when they were playing their own ball, and putting very, very, very nicely. Will Zalatoris. I managed to scrag 25-1 on William Hill with him, eight place each way yesterday, on Will Zalatoris. Willie Z. And I often think, oh, Will Zalatoris, oh, bloody hell, he can't make enough birdies. Sixth at the American Express in January, and he produced a 11 under par 61 on Friday.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember, yeah, he was like 100 and something, in the, and all of a sudden you just saw the leaderboard, Zalatoris birdie. 10 minutes later, Zalatoris birdie, yeah, and was just flying, like, flying through. So yeah, for me, of the short prices at a birdie fest, which I think a lot of the elite guys have got no interest. I mean, when you're seeing Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth playing Southern Hills yesterday, do you genuinely think that they were up for winning the AT&T Byron Nelson this week?
No, when they're not, trying to hit
when
the
they're in
shots.
A different state on the Monday playing the major golf course. Yeah, it just doesn't make sense.
They're trying to dial in the right kind of ball flight and shots that they think they'll need next week.
Yeah.
Surely, if that's me, that's what I'm doing anyway.
Yeah, I think.
And
that's
if you,
I mean, we've seen Spieth does like to go into a major, especially a major where he's going for the Grand Slam. I don't think Jordan Spieth will be missing the cut. And I expect Jordan Spieth, bearing in mind he was first round leader here last year, I think, or he was up there with JJ Spawn. And he was contending. He was only three off the lead. He was third going into the final round. And this is a tournament, again, Byron Nelson, that he holds close to his heart because he's a local lad. I don't think you're going to see Jordan Spieth miss the cut and not be interested. I think he could be a contender. Does he win? Not sure. But I think Zalatoris, again, another local guy that hasn't won on tour. And we saw what sort of happened with Scottie Scheffler when he got his first victory earlier this year. I'm not suggesting that that'll happen to Willie Z. But getting that win at his local tournament, I think, will be far more in the mind of Will Zalatoris this week than the PGA Championship next week. That's my train of thought. The other one I do like, 40-1, I went on Taylor Gooch. I just think Gooch, again, he's another one. For me, Gooch, better in tournaments where low scoring. He was fourth at PGA West in 2019 at 24 under par. Even this season, 21 under par at the Summit Club. That was the CJ Cup that Rory McIlroy won in Las Vegas. And he won at Sea Island, the RSM Classic, at 22 under. I also like Gooch. He's got some decent scores at Scottsdale. He was third going into Sunday this year behind Tigala. And he's also got some very good scores on the North Course at Torrey Pines. Again, another Wisecoff design. So Taylor Gooch. And the other one I've gone for is Mito Pereira. I've gone for my Chilean friend. He's a 66-1 chance. When you look at Mito and you look at where he's gone well on the Corn Ferry, it's all bent grass greens. And you look at his three Corn Ferry titles, 20 under, 21 under and 27 under par were the winning totals. So I like a bit of Mito this week, who's been striking the ball very, very well. I just think he's another one, clearly, doesn't get on with Bermuda grass as well as bent grass. And when we look at Bermuda grass now on the PGA Tour, it basically dominates all the way through to the start of April. So it's Bermuda grass city, it really is. I think now you're going to start seeing Mito actually get towards the top of leaderboards now that we're back on bent grass. So just to firm up my selections, Brandon Wu at 125-1. I've got Mito Pereira at 66s, the same price as Adam Hadwin. Taylor Gooch at 40s, Will Zalatoris at 25-1. Right, let's move on to the Sudal Open in Belgium.
Indeed, yes. Yeah, for all intents and purposes, it's a new event, I guess, on the circuit. It picks up the reins from what was the Belgian knockout, which ran for a couple of years on the then European tour in 2018-2019 on this particular track, just on the outskirts of Antwerp in Belgium. But this time, be back to regular stroke play, full field of 156, and none of this hybrid stroke play, match play malarkey that we saw last time we were here. Fairly typical looking field as well for the DP World Tour. Bernd Wiesberger, favourite 18-1. Thomas Peters, 20s. Sam Horsfield, 22s. Ryan Fox, 22-1. Adrian Maronk, 25-1. Adrian Ategi, 25s also. Justin Harding, 28s. Thomas Detry, 28-1. Oliver Becker, 30-1. And Victor Perez, who's been backed heavily in the last day or so, 33-1. 40-1 bar those leading players. So the course, Rincon International Golf Club, that's the venue on the outskirts of Antwerp, as I said, so you're in the north of Belgium this week. It's a parkland-style layout, some exposed holes, some tree-lined holes too, so it's a bit of a mix. And if we go back to the Belgian knockout, we've got the same routing, at least that's what it looks like from the DP World Tour website right now. Same routing as we saw back in 2018 and 2019, which makes it then a 6,924-yard par 71 with just two par 5s, three par 3s, and then 13 par 4s. So we were talking about last week at the Belfry where they had 12 par 4s, which was kind of more than normal. This time we've got 13 par 4s, assuming there are no late unannounced alterations to the course and the setup from the tour, which, as we know from experience, is there want at various points. But let's roll with this for now. So 6,924 yards, a short par 71 effectively. The greens are Poana based. They are overseeded each year with bent grass, so they try to get it for tournament week around about 80% bent, 20% power. So predominantly bent grass on the greens this week. We've seen some action here before, so we talked about the Belgian knockout. The last one, 2019, was won by Guido Migliozzi. 2018 was Adrian Ategi. We've also had a Challenge Tour event, the Telinet, back in 2010. Now, that was won by Lee Slattery at 21 under par. Different routing that week. So do take it with a little bit of a pinch of salt. But of course, the 2018-2019 were these hybrid affairs as well. So whilst I've got all three results in the course data this week, there should be asterisks and caveats with each of those three results. So do take them with a pinch of salt, but worth looking for just to give you a flavour of the kind of players who may go well this week. In terms of conditions, similar conditions actually to last week. I mean, we're not a million miles away from England, really, are we? If you travel a little bit east, temperatures peaking around about 70 Fahrenheit or so in the afternoons. 5 to 10 mile an hour winds, the odd gust higher maybe, but nothing excessive in terms of wind. Sunny spells and the occasional shower should be quite pleasant, I'd imagine, for the players this week. And there is a little bit of data from the Belgian knockout, and I've listed some of the key elements in this week's preview if you're interested and want to understand how those stats and how the data fell out of those Belgian knockout events. So you can look at it over two ways. You can look at it either over the first 36 holes when they were playing stroke play, or with the overall event, which included these 9-hole matches on Saturday and Sunday. Bear in mind, though, that the data that's collected is only for the first 36 holes. So it is quite sparse. It is quite patchy. And I guess it could lead you down a certain path, which isn't quite factually correct, because it's a very, very small sample size. Anyway, let's go with what we've got. Chris Paisley was the 36-hole leader last time we were here. He was 12 under through the first 36 holes, so scorable, definitely a score can be made. I expect it to be high teens under par, that kind of number this week that gets the job done. Paisley was fourth for strokes gained approach, second for strokes gained tee to green, fifth for strokes gained putting from his 36 holes, so nice all-round performance. Guido he was the overall winner after the match play element was added in. He was first for strokes gained off the tee, first for strokes gained tee to green. So you've got an indication there that a good, tidy tee to green game is going to be something that's something that gets you into the mix here this week. Looking at 2018, there's no strokes gained stats, so it's all back to the basic traditional stats. Jorge Campillo was 8 under through 36 holes. He was first for driving accuracy, fifth for greens in regulation, 12th for putting. So I guess if we could have translated that into strokes gained, it wouldn't be dissimilar to what we saw from the following year. Adrian Ortega won that with the match play. His stats were much more balanced, actually, over the course of the week, but or the rounds that were captured at least. But Ortega is generally quite a neat and tidy player, a decent short game. So yeah, I think there's a fair blueprint there for us to base some assumptions and give us a little bit of direction for this week. One thing that does stick out is the incoming form for all of those four players that I mentioned was really quite positive. Paisley was fourth on his previous start. Campillo was third on his previous start. Ortega was second on his previous start. And Guido had won in Kenya a few weeks before and hadn't missed a cut since that point. So some good incoming form would seem to be a strong indicator. And yeah, as I say, maybe getting up to 18. You may get close to 20 under par, something like that, I guess, that wins it this week, given the conditions that we can see. Now, off back five this week, I've led off with the course proven Adrian Ortega at 25-1. I took that with the eight places that Boyle Sports are offering this week. In fact, do check out Boyle's this week. I know we harp on about them, but they've gone eight places each way, and their prices this week on the Sudal Open are amongst the most competitive as well. It's a really good combination of odds and each way places with Boyle's this week. And they seem to be quite flexible with their pricing. There's a lot of changes and a lot of movement up. You don't often see this with the any of the golf markets. Often the prices just get cut and stay there. But I'm seeing price changes going in the opposite direction from Boyle's this week. So I think it looks to me like they're keeping a very keen eye, a very close eye on what the market's doing this week. So do check them out before you place your bets, if you want to see if there's a better option out there. Adrian Ortega, 25-1 with eight places with Boyle's. He won that 2018 Belgian knockout here that I talked about. He also made the weekend when he was defending the following year. Some other decent Belgian results back on the Challenge Tour as well. 12th and 20th from two starts in Belgium. I think he just enjoys this part of the world by the looks of it. Excellent form in 2022 so far. Third at Ras Al Khaimah, fifth in Qatar, second at the ISPS Handa Championship in Spain as well. Yeah, reasonable last week. 27th at the Belfry. He was 11th for strokes gained putting. That was on Bent Power Greens as well. So he should enjoy the surfaces here this week. And going back to that par four point, he's 16th for the season for par four scoring. No fluke because he was 15th for the full season last year. And can make a score on a course with lots of par fours. And as I said, this course is absolutely littered with par fours this week. So yeah, Ortega leads my line. Also backed Oliver Becker, 28-1. I got him again with eight places. Just to reiterate that point, right now I'm seeing Becker at 30-1. So I've actually lengthened him with Boyle Sports with eight places. So too late for me. I'm done at 28s, but some of you guys may be able to grab him at a better price potentially. Going back to that par four scoring point, he's 11th, Oliver Becker, for par four scoring this year so far. Again, he should enjoy this test, I think. Seven times a winner on the Sunshine Tour over the years, still knocking on the door, still hasn't got a breakthrough on the DP World Tour, but it looks like it's coming, doesn't it? There's lots to like from his form this season so far. He was 9th twice at Ras Al Khaimah, 8th at the Kenya Open, 11th at Pecan Wood, 3rd at Staines City the following week, 10th at Tarragona, 2nd at Catalunya. He's just getting really, really close. Nothing much. Again, he was 27th last week at the Belfry. 6 over he was through the first 10 holes. So he did really well to recover. Should enjoy this. The only downside I can put with Becker is that he's now overnight qualified for sure for the PGA Championship. So let's hope it doesn't overly distract and disrupt his plans for this week. Let's hope it takes the takes any of the pressure off and he can freewheel through this week and pick up a win potentially, get a serious contention at least. So yeah, Becker's in. Ash and Wool have backed as well, 50-1 with 8 places. Again, you can shop around and get lower each way places, and 66-1. I've gone for the shorter price and more places this week. Digging through the data, I've been trying to find some course correlation. Of course, we've only got a couple of years of Belgian knockouts to go with, but the closest correlation I could find was with Diamond Country Club in Austria, which is where they host or did host the Austrian Open, the Lyonnais Open, the Shot Clock Masters. There's quite a lot of crossover between players who've played well in the couple of years that we've seen here. And that particular course over the years. So again, I won't go through the full list. There's a list in my preview if you're interested. Suffice it to say, Ash and Wu has won there in the past, and I think this shorter setup here would suit him quite nicely. He won the Kenya Open a couple of months back, so he's in decent nick. He was fourth for strokes gained approach that week, fourth for strokes gained tee to green. Again, another one, I didn't do this deliberately, but he finished 27th last week at the Belfry. He topped the strokes game putting stats on the week. I think he's a really dangerous contender this week, Ash and Wu at 50-1. Danny Van Tonder I backed as well, 66. He's my fourth. I backed him with Paddy with 7 places each week, 66-1. He's a winner at Carron Country Club. Now, Carron Country Club is where Guido Migliozzi won his Kenya Open, so potentially a little bit of crossover between those two courses as well. He won the South African Open in December. He beat Oliver Becker that week. Now, of course, that won't be classed as a DP World Tour title because in the end it was relegated just down to a Sunshine Tour event because of Omicron at the time. But that's his 8th Sunshine Tour win. He's pretty prolific over on that tour, and he seems to be trending again now. Form going in the right way, stats going in the right way, results going in the right direction as well. 64th, 42nd, 27th the last 3 weeks, or last 3 outings at least. 10th for strokes gained putting last week. I think if he gets his approaches sorted this week, then it could well be game on for Danny Van Tonder this week. And finally, I've saved a few pennies for Richard McAvoy. Now, I picked him up yesterday early on at 400-1 with 8 places with Boyles. There's still 275-1 with 8 places out there. And the price, I think, is worth a couple of quid, I'd say.
Where did he pop up the other week? Top 5?
Yeah, he was third at Catalunya Championship.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and he's quite capable. He won the Porsche European Open back in 2018. 42 now, and not quite ready to call it a day, I don't think. And as you say, that's a recent flash of form, a recent top 3 finish, and you're getting a price that's well into the 200s still. It's quite attractive. I think the shorter tracks suit him. He's not a long hitter by any stretch of the imagination. He's played here twice. He's made the weekend twice. He's got other Belgian form and different tracks as well. 8th and 21st and a couple of Challenge Tour events. So at the price on offer, I thought it was worth taking a small punt on. So that's my 5. McAvoy, Danny Van Tonder, Ash and Wu, Oliver Becker, and at the top, Adrian Ategui. Now, who's actually going to win them, Barry?
this is the week for the transatlantic double pole, is it?
Well, let's hope so. Yeah.
I've picked a couple of guys that had good results to their name in the knockout, just to grab the kind of the course, bit of course form, because I just find it really hard to read into the recent form of the European Tour and draw any decent conclusions from it. So yeah. I've gone for Gavin Green. And Jeff Winter.
Yep. Both on my shortlist, Barry. Very much for the same reasons. Green, I forget without looking, but it's something like 8th and 7th after the 36 hole. Put at the 36 hole point of these two tracks this track over the years as well that he's played it. So, from a stroke play perspective, he's done really quite well. I struggled to back him. I struggled to see him actually getting over the line, but he's talented enough to do it. He's it will come at some point, I think. Yeah, and yeah. Winter, that's sixth in Abu Dhabi, but further back in the year, at the start of the year, was a real eye-opener. And he could do it.
And I'm willing to, I'm going to go with him one more time for JC Ritchie. Mm-hmm. So close last week, so we'll keep on board. I know the price is halved now, but not going to be price proud. I'll stick with him this one more week.
Yep. Fair enough. Yeah, he's been playing some nice stuff, Ritchie, so I can see your logic. I couldn't put you off any of those, I don't think. So best of luck. Steve, anything from you?
Victor Perez, I've got 50 to 1.
Yeah. He's been backed writing, hasn't he?
I only did that on the basis I go through the strokes gain numbers, as you know. And his strokes gain numbers were eye-catching for me.
Mm.
I think he was fourth off the tee, 16th for approach, 19th tee to green. He just seems to be struggling at the moment around the green, which can be kind of sorted out very quickly. He bled strokes terribly at Belfry around the green. And just putting, I mean, he putted positively for the last two events and then he was pretty much neutral last week. So I don't think Perez is far away. I also went independently for Ashen Wu, who, you actually look at Ashen Wu, like you said, he does did he win the KLM Open?
Yep.
So he's won in Holland, won the Netherlands, you know, in the country next door, plays well, yeah, all over Northern Europe. Also got that Kenya Open kind of form that links through across, so just tight, tree-lined, bent grass green kind of courses.
Yeah, it's slightly different course to the one that Guido won on, but it's not dissimilar in terms of the style. It's very, very similar. No. So,
I would have thought it's very similar to this. If you're going for a hot hand, yeah, I wouldn't be. I haven't backed him personally, but I might. It's that JC Ritchie chap. Because we do see this, don't we? These South Africans, they come over with hot form from their own tour. And they come to DP World Tour level and they on the right courses with bent grass, they just keep that going.
Yeah. And, you know, the big, long altitude courses get, you know, when you've boiled it down over there to what they actually translate to, often they are kind of 7,000-yard Parkland-style tracks. I mean, that's... with bent grass greens, there's a lot of correlation there. You can make a case for a lot of the South Africans on that kind of line of thought, I think. Good.
I think that's us, chaps. Is that correct? Are we
all done? Yeah.
All done?
PGA Tour or PGA Championship preview later the week.
PGA Championship research podcast. Yes, we'll do that. I think we're going to record it on Thursday. So it might be out Thursday, listeners. Could be Friday, but... expect Thursday. I'm desperately trying to find out what the actual course yardage is for the PGA Championship. And I never thought it'd be a problem, but it is a problem because I'm seeing different yardages on different outlets. And the PGA Championship website that I've seen is still doesn't give you any details on the course, which is great a week before their major, isn't it? So well done, PGA of America. Excellent way to keep your golfing public fully informed.
Well, if any listeners have got an absolutely definitive number, then tweet it over to us and we can update our thoughts and previews on the back of that.
I think we can safely say, though, it's going to be long and it's either a par 70 or a par 71. So it's going to be tough, mate. Yes, so we'll be back later this week with the PGA Championship Research Podcast. I hope your bets go well, chaps.
Yeah, best of luck, guys.
You too, boys.
Best of luck to the listeners. We'll see you again later this week. Cheerio.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf.